Good morning, everyone. My name is Paula Cassidy. I'm a member of the Al-Anon Family Groups. My home group is the Wednesday Night Recovery Group, and that's in Marietta, Ohio. We meet at 7:30 on Wednesdays. We're not big in numbers, but we have such a good, solid group and a lot of folks that are involved in service work, and that's what I like to see in a group. I'd like to thank the committee for asking us to be here. It's always a pleasure to be asked to go anywhere to do service for Al-Anon. And if I don't feel grateful for that, then maybe I'm in the wrong place. I want to say that the hospitality's been wonderful. I've absolutely enjoyed myself. I feel very comfortable here, very at ease. I don't normally get nervous for these things because I'm not here to try and impress anybody. I'm here to share my story, and not all of it's pretty, that's for sure. And I want to say that I'm grateful that I can be here and share this with a sober husband, and it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just grateful for that. I know me and Joan have one thing in common. After speaking last night, we can both beat the crap out of a man. I think hers was a stranger, but mine was my husband. So I often kid about that. You know, at the time, it wasn't very funny, but we laugh about it now. But I always say, you know, I just have to look at my husband every day and see his crooked nose and know that I'm the one that did that. I grew up not actually in Ohio, but in West Virginia, which is where I participate in Al-Anon service work, and my home group's in Ohio, but we live right on the border of West Virginia. If anybody's familiar with Williamstown, is where the world-famous Fentanar glass factory is. That's where I grew up, two blocks from there. And it's funny how you're that close to things, and I think I was there one time in the sixth grade. We took a little tour through it. But other than that, you know, being that close, never really paid much attention to it. I have three sisters and a brother, and I don't talk a whole lot about my childhood except for the fact that I always felt like I was in the shadows of my sisters. I was never as popular. I was never as pretty. And they always had the boyfriends, and it seemed like the only reason the guys wanted to talk to me was to see what my sisters were doing and who they were dating. My father worked away a lot, and so he wasn't home to be a father. And you know, when I look back on it, I think my mother had such a responsibility raising all of us and trying to keep us out of trouble. And but what I did, I think I probably in my high school years weighed all of 100 pounds soaking wet. Didn't even actually get to wear a training bra till I was 14. So you, I grew up a little bit, but I liked cars, and when I got my license, my dad said, we went to look at these cars at this car lot, and boy, I saw the one I wanted right off the bat. It was a light blue, sky blue Dodge Dart Sport. It had a V8, 318, and it had air shocks on it. And I said, that's the car I want. And dad said, well, this one looks a little bit more reasonable for you. It was like a grandma car. That's what I called it back then. If there's anything that I remember is my dad picking me up from school, and he drove up in that car. And I tell you, I was so happy. he said he put the down payment on it, and if I could pay the insurance, because I worked as a hostess and went to school and didn't really like school. Never did well in school. I always seemed to hang out with the wrong people and get in trouble. Maybe not as much as my sisters, but I got into some things and got into some trouble. And But that car was my thing. And that's how I got my attention from the guys. And we would get out on the highway, and I'd run up and down the highway with the guys. And, you know, I think of these kids that have these, you know, these stickers that say no fear. You know, I can relate to that. Not today, but I could relate to it then. And when I even first met Larry, I took him on a ride his life. And didn't think twice about going up the highway 110, 120 miles an hour and just having a ball. And I did graduate, just barely. We weren't very, we were probably less than middle class, I guess. We just didn't have the funds to go to college, and I wouldn't have wanted to go anyway. Like I said, I couldn't wait to graduate. I worked in a restaurant. I met Larry, actually got stood up on a date one night, and a guy that I'd been seeing for a couple of years did not show up to pick me up, and frankly, I didn't care. I was about done with him. And I think I liked him because his name was Richard Petty, and he... and he liked cars, too. I don't know. But anyway, I met Larry that night. My sister was married to his best friend. And I called her to see what she was doing. And she said, well, we're having a party over at so-and-so's house. You come over and just bring something to drink. Sure. Well, I had drank some. I mean, prom night and experimented with a few other things, but had drank some. And went over to meet my sister at this trailer and opened the door, and there was Larry, the most pitiful thing I think I've ever seen. But you know, us Al-Anons, oh, he looks like he needs fixed bad. He needs some grooming, he needed some teeth, he needed a little bit of everything. But he had the saddest blue eyes you could ever imagine. But I didn't want to let him know that I was interested. He had on bib overalls that were really wrinkled, and he had hair down to here, and I don't know how many teeth were missing, but it was a condition on us getting married that he got teeth. He promised to do that. But anyway, that night, we ended up going to another party, and a friend of mine was having, and he was, I could tell he was trying to move in on me because he got his girlfriend kind of ticked off, and she left. And then he started moving in on me. And he often talks about how he heard me talking about putting money in the bank. And I think that his ears were getting, you know, he heard that. And he liked my car. And I ended up driving him around all over the place. Because his car, I don't think all the doors worked, so you couldn't get in and out very well. But we, that night, Larry got extremely drunk. And I didn't think, it was funny, you know, it was just funny. I didn't think a whole lot of it. He actually had walked out of this party off a fire escape, straight off a six or seven foot drop into an alleyway. There was a big ledge there. And I helped him pick the gravel out of his back. And but there was nothing wrong with that. It was just fun. Little did I know what was yet to come. But I took him, actually the place that he was at, he'll tell you about this tomorrow morning, I'm sure, but he was asked to leave there. It wasn't where he lived. He was staying with somebody. And he said, I don't know where you're going to take me. And I said, well, you've got to tell me where to drop you off because I'm not driving around all night. And he said he was going to marry me that night. And I said, you're crazy. I don't even know you. And, well, anyway, we started dating. And I think it became a mission for me to fix Larry, get him straightened up. And what I didn't know for a long time was when we would go out, we'd go out drinking, and we would always, most of the time, go out with my sister and her husband, who was Larry's best friend. And, you know, I was thinking about this the last time I spoke. Invariably, either one of us would get in fight, bad fight, and we'd end up, you know, somebody would end up getting mad and going home. We never seemed, I think that was our goal, was to go out and enjoy ourselves and have a good time, but it never ended up that way. And it was usually the guys would get together and the girls would get together and they'd be mad at each other and we'd take sides. And but a lot of times after Larry would, I would go home or drop him off or whatever, that's when he was going back out and really doing his drinking. So I didn't see a lot of things, not in the beginning. And I think then it became harder for him to hide it from me. I can remember one occasion when we were out in a bar and we were playing, some guy was trying to help me play pool, and he wasn't very happy about it. And next thing I know, I saw saw Larry go in the bathroom door, and he's in there, and see, this guy went in too. And I said, somebody better go check on Larry. And about that time, the door opens, and I seen Larry laying against the urinal, knocked out cold. Now, Larry loved to fight, and I thought somehow, by me being there, that I was going to be able to intervene or keep him from getting in fights. Hardly ever won a fight in his life. I don't think he ever did, but he certainly gave it a good try. But things, we got married in January 13th, 1979, so we've almost been married 26 years by the grace of God. Certainly, under our own resources, would have never made it, absolutely, without a doubt. We would have either been divorced, killed one another, I don't know, but we never would have made it on our own. When we got married, I know Larry often says that he promised my mom that he would take care of me, and we wouldn't want for nothing, you know, and I would be fine, and he would make sure I had everything I needed. And within 2 weeks of us being married, Larry left the house. He came home with some beer. You see, he promised me that when we got married that he would quit drinking. And I believed him, because he wrote everything down on paper, because we were going to save all this money, and he promised me. And I'm 19 years old, and of course I believed him. And he didn't stay sober. He come home that night with some beer, and I gave him that look, that Al-Anon look. I guess I still have it sometimes today, but... he said, okay, I'll throw it down, I'll dump it down the drain. I said, Larry, if you could just drink a couple of beers. And he said, well, I can do that. And I said, okay. And he left that night and went to party. And left me home. And when he came home, I went on to bed because it was getting late. And next thing I know is somebody came busting in the trailer. And next thing I know, I'm on the floor, and the bed is on top of me. And I didn't know what was happening. And Larry was saying all kinds of things, accusing me of being with somebody. And this is 2 weeks into our marriage, and I said it was the first time that I thought my mom was right. I shouldn't have got married. She tried to tell me. You know, mothers have a way of seeing things that we couldn't see when we're that young. But of course, he didn't remember it, and I thought that was a lie, so I had to tell him all about it and make him feel bad. It was one of my biggest weapons that I used, was to try to make him feel guilty because I didn't know he already did. I didn't know he was suffering with any guilt. So I would tell him all these things that he did and sometimes exaggerate and add a little bit more to it to make it sound better. But a lot of times I didn't have to do that either. We continued, and within 3 years of being married, a lot of craziness was going on, and it was around in that time that I was trying to have kids. See, and my solution was, if I could have a baby, then I'll have something to love and something that will love me back, and I won't care what he's doing. I won't care where he's at. And found out that I couldn't have kids, and I was pretty devastated about that in the beginning, and needed Larry more than ever at that time. And I know today the only way Larry could handle that was to drink. And I'm okay with that today. I believe that this is in God's plan. And I think God had just had other things in store for me. Because, see, I really don't believe that I've got here by accident. I think this is in God's plan. And I think God wanted me to spend time with people like me, maybe, instead of having children. I think he wanted me to have dogs instead of kids. So I've got three of them today. But anyway, when he came to me, I still had no understanding. I still thought my love and my will and would make Larry stop drinking. At this point, he's gotten so bad that he physically looks terrible. And when he came to me and he said, "Paula, I'm going to go to treatment." I talked to him at work, and I'm going to go to treatment for my drinking. I don't think he had any idea exactly what that meant. I think he was going to go to the hospital and look at magazines and just have fun. And I didn't know what it meant, certainly didn't know. And I said, "Larry, do you have to go?" I practically begged him not to go. And if you can imagine that, I just didn't have a clue. And, well, he went. And I remember taking him up there, and he drank all the way up and finished off his beer in the parking lot, and that cost him a couple extra days in treatment. But what was hard was leaving him up there. I think he was probably 24 and I was 23 years old, and I felt like I was leaving a 10-year-old kid, you know. And I feel like that was my role in our marriage for a long time, was to treat my husband like a child. And, you know, I didn't know what else to do but to do that. And, when he went up to treatment, then they made me leave right away. And I didn't like that, and I went home and I cried, and I cried all the way home, and I just was such a mess. And I'll never forget Frank. I just saw him recently after about 20 years, so Frank was doing his 12-step work at night, and he came and talked to Larry. And then he called me at home. Frank was from Columbus, Ohio, and we lived in Marietta. And he took the time to call me and tell me what was going on. And after that, we had lost touch with Frank, and we knew that he was still in Columbus for a while, and then he moved down south. And we were speaking up at Hilliard last month in Hilliard, Ohio. And I'm sitting there. It was a big dinner, and we're sitting there, and this man walks in. I said, "My God, that's Frank." I said, "Larry, that's Frank." And something in me just felt overjoyed. I can't tell you how important, now I know God played a part in this, but how important it was for Frank to be there that night for Larry and for me. And then to see him after all that time, it just was very touching. I could hardly talk when I got up to talk. 12-step work's really important. And we got to visit with him for just a few minutes, and I just feel totally blessed that he was there for us at that time, and thank you. Well, after Larry stayed in treatment for 30 days or 34 days, he came home, everything, he was cured. And he made me a pretty leather belt, and he made me a pretty leather keychain, and he would call me and he'd say, "Paula, I went to my counselor, told me today that you're sicker than I am and that I have alcoholism and it's a disease." And I just felt like he was saying, "So it's not my fault." And I thought, "You're not getting off that easy. You're going to pay for what you've done," sort of thing. That was my thinking. And he would call me and say, "I made you a belt today." And I'd think, "Oh, if he thinks a belt's going to make up for all this, he's crazy." But I really thought that they fixed him. They sent him home with all these books. They sent him home with this big book, and I thought, they really stressed needing to read that big book, so I thought, there must be something in there. I'll read it and see if I can figure out how to keep him sober. And which was not a bad thing. I might have been the wrong motive, but it wasn't a bad thing to read it. We're driving home from treatment, and Larry says, "Stop by the Norwood so I can tell everybody I'm home." Now, the Norwood was where he drank a lot. And I said, "What?" "I'm just having a Coke." "Oh, okay." I still felt really weird about that. I thought, this doesn't make sense. So we stopped. Everybody patted him on the back, and, you know, we went on home to start our new life together. Wasn't that something? We went and bought us a new... This was back when HBO first came out. So we went and bought us a new colored TV, and we got HBO, and we got a deck of cards, and we were going to play rummy and watch HBO. And he was going to stay sober. And we went to a meeting when he came back. The first meeting I went to was in March of 1982. And we had a big church, and we had a big open AA meeting, and then there was an Alateen meeting, and then we had a beginner's meeting for some of the new Al-Anons, and then a regular Al-Anon meeting. Now, all that's there now is just a really small open AA meeting. It's amazing what has happened there, but, and I don't know the reason for that, but I remember going in there, and I would have been 23 years old, and everybody there was like 40, 50, and I thought, I don't belong here. There was hardly any men then, and everybody had a blue book, and I wanted a blue book really bad, and I don't know why. I didn't know what it was, but I didn't even have the money to pay for the book. And I think at that time they were $4.50, and Fran, who was my first sponsor, said, "Paula, if you want to take a book, you can pay 50 cents a week on it." And I said, that'll work. And I paid my book off. But I felt really, really afraid when I was in the meetings. I was always on the verge of I'm emotional anyway, but I was always on the verge of crying. I thought, if anybody looks at me, I'm going to cry. If I have to read something, I'm going to cry. I just would have soon just slid right under the table and disappeared. And but I heard a couple of things in my first meeting. And I heard that it wasn't my fault that my husband drank. And I know that a lot of people don't understand that, but when you hear day after day after day that it's your fault, you begin to believe it. And, I mean, my self-esteem was just nil when I got here. And the other thing that I heard was I could be good to myself. Now, I didn't know exactly what that meant, and I thought, I think I was sharing in the meeting the other night here, Thursday night, that I thought that meant I could go buy me things, you know, or go on a shopping spree. I didn't realize what that meant, but today I know what that means, and it's not anything like what I thought. But anyway, those are some of the things I remember about my first meeting, and I wasn't that anxious to go back. I didn't feel like, oh, this is the answer. I was just so afraid, and I couldn't even concentrate in the meetings because I was afraid when I would come out of the meeting, he would be gone. He would have skipped out and run downtown. So it was very hard in the beginning for me to even think about detaching, and I didn't have a clue what that meant. And I continued to go to some open AA meetings, which I'll be forever grateful. Early on, I just went to a lot of open meetings, speaker meetings, discussion meetings, and I always felt a little funny in open discussion meetings because I always thought, I wonder if they think I'm alcoholic. You know, I always felt that way. I don't know why. And what if I say, I'm just Paula? Will they think, oh, is she afraid to say she's an alcoholic? And of course, Larry just felt like I never should talk because I wasn't one of them. But we continued our little journey in and out of AA and Al-Anon from like 82 to, well, for me, 82 to 86. I sat in meetings and I waited for the miracle to happen. Everybody kept talking about how wonderful it was. And I just sat there and I did nothing and I waited for it to drop right in my lap. And in the meantime, Larry's starting to go out and drinking again, and I'm thinking, okay, something's not working. Or we'd be driving up to meeting, and he'd just be chewing me out, up one downside and the other, you know, and go in the meeting, well, hello, how are you? And I would just want to take a hammer and, I think, but anyway, I struggled along, and I did join my home group, which is still the home group I have today, and I became the treasurer, and I became the treasurer for like 2.5 years, and I didn't want to be, because see, Larry was out drinking again, and I had that connection now. You know, I had to get the money. I had to go to the meeting and get the money and everything. And by this time, and he'll share about this tomorrow, I knew he was taking the Al-Anon money. And I was hiding it everywhere I could find. I mean, we couldn't even make our bills. But I was so trained, I want to say trained, that he had to have money for drinking because the consequences were worse if he didn't. I had tried the going with him and drinking, you know, I tried that. I thought maybe somehow I would have some control. I tried the staying home. Even early on, I tried detaching and not enabling, and I'd be able to do it one day and the next day I'd be right back at it. And, you know, by this point, you know, I can feel myself going down, down, down. And we were constantly fighting physically and verbally and getting in fights right on Front Street in Marietta and police coming and breaking things up. And one night I remember us walking home and He always hated it when I whistled and acted happy. So in order to get his goat, I would do that sometimes. So, and you know how us Al-Anons are real, what's the word for it? I notice when Larry was at a certain point, and when he's a certain point of his drinking, he would do this thing with his fingers, and I know he was really drunk. Now, I don't know why I remember that, but he would just, I could see him, he would just be going like this. And I think, oh, he's really. So this one night, I was walking up a street, and as usual, I wanted to go home early. I was ready to go, and he wasn't. And so I started walking ahead of him, whistling, and he was getting mad. So he caught up with me, turned me around. I slapped him across the face, and he just gave me one shove like you wouldn't believe. And I landed in this gravel driveway, and I took like all the hide off my hands. And their police came. We didn't know where they came from, but they were there. So they made us go opposite directions. And the next morning, you know, I'm sure you guys understand this. Everything was made up in the morning. We made up in the morning. Everything was fine, dandy. And we're going to try it again. We're going to try it again. Everything will be okay. Tonight we'll go out and have a good time. Well, he seen my hands the next morning because actually I was sitting. I was kind of strange because even in my 20s, I sat and watched TV in front on the floor in front of the TV like a kid. And I was sitting there one morning with my hands like this so he could see my hands. And he asked me what happened, and I told him. And he said, well, you better go get some Band-Aids and put on those. You can't go downtown looking like that. So I go to the drugstore, and I get these huge Band-Aids. They're like this big. And I put them across my hands here. And that's a craziness we lived with. And in July of 86, I went to get my driver's license. My birthday was the 9th, July 9th, and I went on July 8th and got my driver's license renewed. And I talk about this not because we all know what our driver's license pictures look like, but I saw somebody that was dead. I saw somebody that was not there. And I had come home one day, and I was in the kitchen, and Larry came home, and he didn't say a word. He just came. I come out from the kitchen. I was standing right there in, by the TV, and he just threw me to the floor and got on top of me and started choking me. And I could see that he was, he must have been in a blackout because with me trying to fight him off, and I was pretty small at that time too, and Larry was about the same size he is now, but he was drunk enough I was able to get him off of me, but he was sitting on top of me and he looked at me and he said, Paula, I love you. And here is a man that just tried to choke the life out of me. And he's telling me he loves me in the next breath. And I got up from the floor and I went in. I had had a hysterectomy by then. And I got up and I went into the refrigerator and I took down a bottle of pills. And I took them and I went and laid down. I took all of them. And they were muscle relaxers, what they were. But that's the only thing I had in the house. It obviously wasn't enough, but I slept for 24 hours and felt very limber the whole next day. But do you think that Larry would have been concerned? He said, God, you must have been tired. You slept an awful long time. And of course, we made up and we went out to eat, and we're sitting at Bob Evans and we're sitting at the counter, and I said, Larry, do you know why I slept as long as I did? And I was hoping this was going to be the moment. I was hoping this was going to be the moment that he was going to say, God, Paul, I'm so sorry that I've drove you to try and even kill yourself. When I told him what I did, he threw his silverware down and he got up and walked out. And that's not the reaction I wanted, that's for sure. But I knew then that I needed to get back to Al-Anon, or I was going to die, and I knew that. So that night I went home and I got down on my knees and I said, God, you know, I'd never really prayed before. And I used to sit in meetings early on and I would think to myself, I wish they'd quit talking about God. You know, I wish they would just stop it. And I used to go to this meeting at the hospital, and there was always a lot of new people there. And I think if somebody mentions God one more time, I know one of these new people are going to get up and walk out. Well, nobody ever did. It was me. It was me that was feeling so uncomfortable. And that night I got down on my knees and I said, God, please take care of Larry because I can't do it anymore. And I made a conscious decision that day to let him go. And so I know for a fact it can be done. I went to an open AA meeting that night, and one of Larry's sponsors walked up to me. He said, Paula, what have you done? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you look different. And I said, and I told him what I did. And I didn't know if that was why I looked different, but he said, well, your face ain't as gray anymore. You look a little brighter. And he took the time to talk to me and to help me, even though Larry was still drinking. And that was the day, July 8th of 1986, that my journey began, I feel. My commitment to Al-Anon began, and I began to grow. And Larry drank for another 9 months or so. And I told Larry, sat him down, and I said, these are my boundaries, and if they're crossed, then I will take the action I need to take. And I told him at that time he wasn't going to abuse me anymore. And I think for the first time in ever that he believed me that I meant business. And but I laid my boundaries out, and I said, you go downtown, I don't care if it's 30 below, you'll find your way back home because I'm not coming after you. I felt so much like a prisoner in my own house. Even a prisoner by that telephone. I would sit at home and I would think, he's going to call. Sure as I leave and go get a pack of cigarettes, he's going to call. And then he's going to come running home and he's going to be really mad, you know. So I would stay home and wait for that phone to ring. So I was, even at that time, I was an obsessive housekeeper. I would clean, I would sweep, I was obsessed about bathing. I would take sometimes 2 and 3 baths a night just to get calmed down and get myself relaxed, and have to sit and lay in bed and wait for him to come home and not know what was going to happen. And there were nights that he absolutely would not leave me alone under no circumstances. And I no longer fixed him his dinner and stuff when he came home. If he wasn't there to eat it, then that was his problem. So I began to change, and I really became involved in my group and started going to a lot of meetings. We had a lot more meetings even back then than we do now. And I realized somewhere along the line that I was detaching. And not only was I detaching, but I felt like I was detaching with some love. My feelings were starting to change towards Larry. I was no longer bitter. I no longer felt that hate. I felt some compassion. And I'm not sure where that was coming from. I don't know if I have an explanation for it today, but I know I was able to be there for him when he come and asked for help. And I guess I would walk around the house, and Larry would test me. And sometimes we lived in a three-room apartment. Sometimes he would run me clear back into the bathroom with his finger in my face, and he'd say, "What's Al-Anon tell you to do about that?" You know. And I would say, "We'll talk about this when you're sober." And that was my answer to him all the time. But I would go around the house going, "Keep the focus on yourself, keep the focus on yourself." And I would say that to myself, you know, often. And one night I was out with my sponsor, and we were sitting having a cup of coffee after the meeting, and it just, like a light bulb went off. It just dawned on me that I hadn't thought of Larry the whole time we were sitting there. And I almost cried. And I said, "Do you know, I haven't thought about where Larry is, where he's gone, where he's been. I've really been into just sitting here listening to you talk and us share." And I knew I was detaching. And I knew I was finally getting what they were talking about in the meeting. I continued to get involved in Al-Anon, and I feel that service work has been the biggest help to me. We were talking about the book last night, "When I Got Busy, I Got Better," and that really happened in my case. And not that I was reluctant to do anything in service-wise, because I didn't feel adequate, I guess. But I got involved, and I started participating in my home group, and I really feel that the home group is the foundation of my recovery. And I just feel so blessed to have the home group I do. And I hope you guys feel that way too about your home group. And I just love to be a part of it. And there's such nice girls and guys that go to that meeting, and we all love one another, and we all get along, and we have, you know, for us it's important to follow the traditions, and we have regular group conscience meetings, and it's just important to me. Larry ended up going to treatment again in February of 1987, and I can guarantee you one thing, I did not beg him not to go. I said, "Get in the car, I'll get your stuff packed." But when he came home that day, when he called me, I was at home, it was on a Sunday, and he was downtown. I knew he was downtown, and he called me, and he said, "Paula, I need help." And I sensed there was some sincerity in his voice, and I said, "Larry, if you're serious and have an honest desire to stop drinking, you get a cab and you come home." And he was home in a very short time, and I'd called a member of AA, and we took him up to Parkside in Columbus, Ohio. And we got to about Zanesville, I think, which is about halfway point. And Larry kind of raised up in the back seat, and he said, "I think I want to go back." And I said, "I don't think so." "I don't think so." So he was off. But by this time, I was well on my way to recovery, and I was feeling good. And I knew that I could change, and I could be different, and I could still live in the house with somebody that was drinking, which was amazing, especially with Larry's type. You know, he was a real tester of my patience. And I got involved, and I became a DR, and just started getting active, started working the steps. And I remember the first time that I worked my step four, I went to, actually made my list out, and I used the big book, because I like the big book. And I got my inventory all out, and my resentments, my fears, and all that stuff, and my sex conduct, and all that. And I thought, now, well, who am I going to tell this stuff to? Because, see, I had some skeletons in my closet, too, and that I didn't want to talk to anybody about. So I paid a counselor that I knew, who was also an AA member, to hear my fifth step. And I'll never forget, I just thought, I didn't know what I thought. She was going to turn green and kill over in the chair or what. But she told me, you know, she understood. And I proceeded on that journey of working the steps, and I could feel the promises coming true. And I remember the first amends I made was to one of Larry's old girlfriends, someone that I had physically harmed. And I saw her coming out of a store, and I thought, oh, God, this is wherever possible. And so I sat there, and I put my head down in the car, and I said a little prayer. And I said, God, give me the courage to make my amends. And when I sat there and waited for her to come out, and I called her over to the car, and I think she was a little nervous. She stood about 2 feet from the car like this, and I told her what I was doing and that I was in a program and that I was asked to make amends to the people that I've harmed and that I knew I had harmed her, and I wanted her to know that would never happen again. I don't remember what all I said, but I know I had a spiritual awakening. I could not wait to get home and tell Larry. I ran in the door and I said, Larry, I just made amends to Serena. And it feels so good. And I always had a good experience with that, making amends. And I just felt like I was on the right road. And by this time, I could see Larry was headed in the right direction. I could see Larry wanted to stay sober for Larry. And that it was no longer because he thought I wanted him to. Because at this point, it didn't matter. I needed to survive. We're going along, and I became, got elected to be delegate to serve the West Virginia area. And what an awesome responsibility. And I'll tell you right now, at this point in time, Larry was my inspiration for that. And I told him, I said, we were going to the voting assembly, and I said, I'm not going to stand for anything. I guess I just didn't think, you know, that I would. And he said, Paula, you stand and you let God decide. Well, God decided I needed to be delegate, I guess. So what an opportunity. We were actually delegates. He served 3 years because the delegate before him had to resign, whereas AA's only served 2 years. We served 3 years. So there was a year there that we were doing it together, and I was in Virginia Beach at the conference, and he was in New York at the conference, and it was just awesome. You know, I'd call him up, and I'd say, I can't believe we're making all these big decisions that are going to affect Al-Anon worldwide, you know. And the last conference I went to, I had a younger sister that was married to an alcoholic, and he was also an addict, had three small children, and he had many times tried to get sober through AA. And I was getting ready for my last conference, to go to my last conference, and I was sitting at work, and it was Good Friday, which was not the best day for me because that's when my grandmother died, who I got to make amends to, too, before she passed away. And Larry walked in my work, and he said, Paula, Kevin had an accident. This is my youngest sister's husband, and she wants you down at the hospital. And I said, okay. Kevin died. He got killed. He ran in straight into a vehicle head on. And the day of his funeral was the day I was to leave to go to the conference. And that was probably one of the saddest days. I didn't want to go. I wanted to be there for my sister. And it was a rainy day, and I drove from Marietta, Ohio to Virginia Beach. It rained every bit of the way there, and it was a dreary, sad, day. And I'm claustrophobic a little bit, so I had like a panic attack because I didn't want to go under the Chesapeake Bay. I didn't want to go under the tunnel. And Larry had to talk me through that. He said, Paula, just breathe. And when I got there and seen all the delegates that I've seen in the past, and I got there in time to get in on the meeting that they have the night before the conference starts, and I was able just to share my pain. And I knew that I was glad that I was there after that, because I was with people that understood and that didn't judge me, or they loved me no matter where I was at. And when I finished up with that, I kind of took a back seat in service, and I'm just actually doing some work in the district as a district secretary, and that's okay. But from the time that my brother-in-law got killed, I saw a change in me, because several other things had happened within a six-month period, and it just seemed like it was a little bit too much. We put our little doggy to sleep after 14 years. I mean, he was my buddy. I quit smoking after all those years. I quit smoking, and just a lot of things were going on. And we came back from the conference and found out that a friend that Larry had known and drank with for a long time had left the Marietta area and went to Atlanta, actually, to work with AT&T, had a suit and tie job, and came back to Marietta homeless. And then he had died under the bridge. And I think that time, I used to think depression, I'll just snap out of it, you know. But I think I went into a depression. And I had also found out there were some physical reasons for my feeling the way I was too. And so I went to the doctor, and I've, in the last 4 years, I'm kind of been back on the road to recovery. I was just, felt like I was just barely hanging on to my home group. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to go to any more meetings than I had to. It was just, and I know Larry even said, you've got to talk to your daughter. He said that to me, you've got to talk to your daughter. I felt like I was losing a grip. And I was talking the other day in my home group, and I said, you know, I think I'm doing better. And one of the girls that my sponsor, she said, I know you're doing better. I know you're, you, I know something's working. And we've recently just got back into the, I said, you guys, you know, I've been through, seems like 4 years of withdrawing and not having a conscious contact with God and not really working the steps. And I said, let's go through the steps together. And so five of us are going through the steps. We're meeting at our houses, taking turns meeting at houses, and we're actually on our eighth step, making our list of amends. And I have a good job today. When I first started this job, I worked for a small insurance agency, and it's a family owned. It was like a three generation, and the boss's son I didn't like. I felt like he was lazy, and he got by with all these things that none of us would get by with. So I had real big resentment. And I would go to the meetings, and I would talk about him, and I would say, I just don't know what to do with this. And the more I fought it, the worse it got. And when I let go, when I asked God for help, something happened. We get along just absolutely wonderful today. And I can't explain it. I can't write it down what happened, but it happened. So I have a great job today that I really enjoy. Insurance isn't the best business to be in right now, but it doesn't seem like it. People don't like us very well. But I'm happy there, and I feel like I'm really coming around, and it's because of you people, and it's because of Larry and his support, even when I feel like I'm going to go crazy, or even when I feel like I'm still giving them Al-Anon looks. Because sometimes I still think I know what's best for him, believe it or not. But I'm just happy to be here and happy to have shared with you, and hope that I was able to say something that helped you. I don't know. But thanks for having me. Love y'all.